You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock. Dr. Brock is a veterinarian, teacher, and author. He is a veterinarian in West Texas. He is actually in La Mesa, Texas. He is a graduate and also actually an adjunct professor of Texas Tech University. And he is, as I mentioned, La Mesa, population 3,000. And so everybody knows everybody in town, I would imagine, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute. But his book is called Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, and it's a collection of some of his stories, experiences that he's had being a veterinarian in a small town like La Mesa. We'll talk to Dr. Brock now and bring him in so that he can tell you about some of those stories. Dr. Brock, thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be here, Louis. Thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, you are the author of the book Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. And it's interesting that the title, Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, because you are in the middle of nowhere, according to some people. But crowded, does that mean that because of all the work you do and you're the only vet in town? Because, as I mentioned, there's a 3,000 population.
Well, it's kind of the way it all started. I was in Clarendon, Texas, and I was a veterinary there when I got out of veterinary school in 1990. And it came time for me to leave, and one of the people there in Clarendon asked me where I was going. I said, well, I'm going to La Mesa, Texas. I'm going to be, you know, a horse doctor there. And that fella, he said, you'll be a horse doctor in La Mesa, Texas when pigs fly. He said, that place is in the middle of nowhere. Well, that was 20 years ago, and we see about 10,000 horses a year and have 25 or 30,000 clients. So I called it that because this is the middle of nowhere. We've gotten pretty crowded here.
Did she say when tanks fly or cats?
Pigs, when pigs fly.
Pigs fly. Okay, so we got to beware of flying pigs now.
Yeah, that's right. So I started to call the book When Pigs Fly, but I didn't think that was, but that'd be a little misleading.
That's actually maybe your second book.
Maybe so, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your experience as a vet. First of all, getting out of vet school, and tell us a little bit about doctors, doing their residency, working in being fellows at different universities, at different hospitals. What about a veterinarian?
Well, veterinarians can do things similar to that. It's not nearly as common as it is in human medicine. Human medicine, you know, they have hospitals that grant privileges. And so if you want to be a surgeon, you have to get privileges at that hospital. Veterinarians kind of open their own clinic and they do whatever they want to do. But there's opportunity for specialization. And, you know, you can do residencies in surgery or medicine or ophthalmology or dermatology, all the same things that people do. But there's not very many spots for that in America because there's only 29 veterinary schools in the whole country. And so most of those things will take one or two residents a year. So it's not a real common thing. You can specialize when you get out of school, like I did what's called the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners for horses, where you specialize in horses and do all this testing and take all these exams and write all these papers, and then you can call yourself a specialist in horses. And I did that, and a couple of other vets here at our clinic. We have six veterinarians at our clinic. They're doing that also now.
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock. He's a veterinarian in La Mesa, Texas, and he is also the author of the book Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, a collection of some of his experiences as a veterinarian in La Mesa, Texas. Bo, what about, why did you pick horses? You know, we when people think of a veterinarian, they think of dogs, cats, taking my pet to the vet, but rarely do you hear somebody saying, you know, I'm taking my horse to the vet.
Oh, you know, I like horses. I think they're the coolest beast in the world. I mean, you think about it, they weigh 1,200 pounds, and they can run 40 miles an hour for 2 or 3 miles. There's just nothing like them. And the people that come with them are my kind of people. You know, we get racehorses, cowboys, barrel racers, and people that jump over fences and do dressage and play polo. And I don't know, it's just been a lot of fun to get to work on them. And they're challenging. They're very athletic. And so it's almost like being a doctor for football players or something, because you got to make them run fast and jump high, like, you know, and it's pretty challenging. It's a lot of fun. I like horses, yeah.
Going back to the doctors, when they're in the residency and when they're doing their training, they work on corpses. They have different things that they learn about the anatomy and about diseases. What about veterinarians and especially a horse doctor?
Oh, yeah, we do all that stuff in school. You know, we go through 2 years of pretty intense training on anatomy and physiology and pharmacology and kinesiology and all those things at endonology. And yeah, we learn all that stuff. And it's a pretty rigorous program. Actually, my middle daughter, Abby, she's going to start veterinary school next year there at Texas A&M. That's where I went. So she's going to be a veterinarian too. Got three daughters, and the middle one is going to be a veterinarian.
That's great. Congratulations.
Oh yeah, it makes me happy.
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock, veterinarian and author of the book Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. You mentioned that a woman told you, why are you going to be an animal doctor? A horse can't talk, a cow can't tell you what's wrong with them. But I guess it's a fair question. And so you answer that in the book. We don't want to give the story away, but tell us about what do you do when you're trying to figure out what's wrong with one of these beautiful animals and they can't speak to you unless it's Mr. Ed.
You know, there's people that came before me that are a lot smarter than me, but they figured out how to do things, and we just do what they taught us. You know, if you go to the dentist and they're going to drill your tooth, they'll put some local anesthesia, some lidocaine right there on the nerve that goes to that tooth, and then they can drill around on it and you don't feel it. So what we do to horses when they're lame is we know where their nerves and their leg goes to, and so we can take some of that same stuff that the dentist uses and put just a little bit around that nerve, and if the horse quit limping, then we know where that nerve goes, and so we know where the pain comes from, and then we can take x-rays or do ultrasounds or do MRIs, and we can figure out what's going on in that area. So since they can't tell us where it hurts, we just figure it out by eliminating the pain.
Bo, as you mentioned, a lot of people before you were smarter, and I'm not insinuating that, but the fact that the horse has been around forever, and the American West, of course, we hear a lot about, everybody had a horse, and if you didn't have a horse, you know, it was almost like being without a car, and the horse was used in many fashions. Some of the cowboys loved their horses, and that was their sole companion because they were loners or traveling out by themselves. What are the things that you see in the movies and you read about in whether it be Louis L'Amour books or Larry McMurtry, the fact that when a horse has a broken leg, they would generally shoot the horse, and people would wonder, why is that?
Well, because there's lots of reasons. You know, there's potential energy, and that is stored in the bone, and there's a potential for it to happen. That's why I call it potential. So horses are so heavy that their bones are so dense that when they don't really break, they just explode. And so if you remember back, you know, watching race horses, you know, a few years ago, we had a racehorse break his leg. Yeah. And they took that horse to the University of Pennsylvania, worked on it, and it's just very difficult to put all the pieces back together because they don't ever just break, they explode because there's so much potential energy. And then the other problem, and the real big problem is we could go in and put all those bones back together, but in the process, that horse has to stand up. It stands up to sleep, it stands up to eat, and because they're so massive, in the process of not bearing weight on the bad leg, say if it's the front right leg, then the left front leg has to hold 65% of the horse's weight all day, and it decomposes, breaks down, or gets laminitis. And so it's not that we're not smart enough to fix a shattered leg. It's because the recovery is so difficult because the horse breaks down in the other leg.
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock. He's a veterinarian, teacher, and author of the recent book, Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. We're talking a little bit about history and what veterinarians do and a little bit about horses, and then we're going to get into the book. Here in El Paso, of course, a lot of people have horses. They know about horses. And as we said, you know, living in the West, a horse is not a stranger to people. But you filled us in at the beginning of the interview for people who may not be familiar with horses about the fact that they weigh about 1,200 pounds, can run up to 40 miles per hour. And one of the things that also comes out in a lot of books, in a lot of movies, and people may not, you know, now that they have the internet, they can go up and look anything up. But as far as the height of a horse, they'll talk about hands. Explain what that means.
Well, they measure to the top of their withers, which is kind of where their neck ties into their body. And a hand is 4 inches. And so if a horse is 15 hands tall at the withers, he's 60 inches or 5 feet tall at the withers. So if you hear a horse that's 15'1", 15'2", 15'3", that means he'd be 5'1", 5'2", 5'3", and then it's not a 15'4", it goes to 16 hands after that, and then it'll be a 16'1", 16'2", 16'3". So different breeds of horses are characteristically different sizes when it comes to height, you know, kind of what they're programmed to do. Cutting horses are short, you know, really athletic, but not very tall. And then some of those, you know, big-footed draft horses, they'll be 17 or 18 hands tall, so they'll be really tall. So, you know, they're kind of, horses have a lot of different potential duties and things that they do in life, and they're physically designed to do those things. So big old draft horse that's pulling the plow is going to be strong and tall, and a little fast-cutting horse that's trying to get calves back together is going to be really short and quick. So all sizes of horses and all kinds of athletic performance potential in them, it's fun.
We're visiting with Dr. Bo Brock, veterinarian, teacher, and author of the book Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere is a collection of short stories, actually kind of, you know, little pieces of information of the experiences that Dr. Brock has had as a horse veterinarian. And they're from page one. The reader is laughing because the way he writes and actually the fact that these stories are true. And one of the ones that really, I'm sure people, if they can picture this, and your wife, you mentioned, was kind of like, what are you doing? And that's the delivering of a goat in your kitchen.
You know, the book is, I'll tell you how the book came to be. I moved to La Mesa, and you came to a small town. They have a newspaper here. It comes out two times a week, and they wanted me to write an article once a month about veterinary stuff. And so the first month I wrote about parvo and dogs, and then I read about Coggins tests and horses, and nobody read it. So the third month I just wrote a funny story. In fact, I think the story was Otis, the first story in the book is what I wrote, and people loved it. And so once a month I'd write just kind of a, you know, a funny diatribe about life working with animals, you know, in West Texas. And so there was this old lady that lived here, and her grandson was a veterinarian in Missouri, and she sent him the paper with one of those stories in it, and he liked it, and so he sent it to a veterinary magazine up in Chicago, Illinois, and I didn't even know she had sent the thing, and I didn't know that the veterinarian had sent the story up there to the magazine. Well, then the magazine calls me up and asked me about it, said, do you write these often? And I said, well, I, you know, just once a month I'll write one in this newspaper. And they wanted to publish one once a month. Well, that magazine goes all over the world, and that kind of led to me writing for other things. And the next thing you know, the years passed, and I had hundreds of those stories. And so I got a technician here, and she knows how to work that Facebook thing. So she started our clinic a Facebook page, and we started putting those old articles on there kind of one at a time, and people just encouraged us that we should put them together into a book. So we did, and that's how the book came to be. And it's been pretty fun to, you know, when I was applying to veterinary school in the mid-'80s, 1980s, I walked into the veterinary school there at Texas A&M and sat down for the interview, and there was a lady that came out, and there was 40 people in my little section. And she walked into the room, and she said, you guys have the great misfortune of applying to veterinary school when there is a best-selling book out by James Herriot. And there was 1,500 people apply to veterinary school back there per year, and they take 128. Well, now they only have about 300 to 350 apply. And I think the best and brightest are kind of going towards other things because they don't really have any heroes. You know, no James Herriot books to read by their parents and tell them how fun it is to be a veterinarian. I hope that book, put together the way it is with smiles on every page or heartwarming stories about, you know, working with people that own animals, I hope it inspires some of these people, like in El Paso. You know, we need veterinarians in El Paso. Some of my best veterinary friends are there in El Paso, and they talk about how not many people want to go practice in El Paso. So we need more young people that want to go out and chase cows around and do C-sections on goats in the kitchen in the middle of the night. You know, it's a fun job. It's full of adventure, and it's wonderful.
It's interesting. You talk about doing a C-section on a goat in the middle of the kitchen, but the way you describe that in your book, the family was just like, you were their hero.
Yeah, well, that goat was their best buddy, and they didn't have a telephone, so they just came to the house, and, you know, I got all these kids running around in the kitchen and standing on top of tables, and the mom and dad and a couple of the older kids are helping me pull baby goats out. We're getting covered with gunk that comes out of the inside of a goat when it has a baby, and it was quite an adventure. Of course, then my wife gets out of bed, come and see what's going on, and she's got the patience of Job. Whenever you got a C-section occurring in the kitchen floor, yeah, you gotta have a lot of patience.
She didn't get your goat.
She wasn't happy, but she got better. She was happy to see the goats alive.
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock, veterinarian, teacher, and author of the new book, Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, a collection of stories and little adventures about, as he just mentioned, Dr. Brock, about giving a goat a C-section in the middle of the night in your kitchen. And you mentioned James Herriot, and it's funny that you mentioned that, ironic actually, because right before I was going to do this interview with you, one of the other professors here said, oh, have you read the book All Creatures Great and Small? And I said, yes, of course. And I'm sure that a lot of people, you know, that book has brought smiles to them, as you mentioned. And it was recommended for me when I was at MD Anderson and somebody said, you should read this book because it'll take your mind off things and bring smiles to your face. And it surely did.
That would be nice. You know, I've had a lot of people that have called me and told me things just like that about the book. A lady in Louisiana that was undergoing chemotherapy and having a really hard time, she just called me up one day and told me how much she enjoyed the book and how it took her mind off of bad things that were happening. And boy, if you're an author, and I'm really not an author, I'm really not a veterinarian, I'm just really kind of a guy like all the rest of us. But if you do something like that and people read it and it makes them smile, it's just so rewarding. I mean, it just makes everything else kind of seem insignificant.
Since you teased us earlier, and you teased our audience, actually, tell us about Otis, because you mentioned that, and that's the first story in your book.
Otis? Yeah, Otis was my very first case as a veterinarian, and it was kind of an interesting thing because I went to work, and I'd been out of school for 3 days, and two of those days were weekend days. And I went to work, and I just, you know, I got there, and there was no other veterinarians. When you get out of school, you're still pretty unsure. You know, you haven't practiced much, and I got a call from a fellow named Otis. Very first case, and I drove and drove out to the middle of Paladura Canyon and ran into Otis. And Otis is a type B fat guy, and you know what I'm talking about. Now, a type A fat guy, he pulls his pants all the way up to just below his titties, and a type A fat guy has it below his belly. Same size guy, just different theory on britches. And Otis was a type B. He had a short zipper. Then those type A guys, they got a 20-inch zipper. You know, you've seen them. But Otis was a type B, and that's kind of important because this big old shorthorn cow was laying down up on the side of a hill, and she was down. And I finally found Otis, and he was a cusser. And he, you know, he's one of them fellas that put a cigar in his mouth but never lit it, and it just kind of disappeared. And I didn't know Otis from anybody. And I get there, and he said, who are you? And I said, well, I'm Dr. Brock, you know. And he didn't know I just graduated 2 days ago. And he said, well, I got this big cow down. So we crawl up this hill, about 15 foot, to this flat spot above a dry creek bed. And my cow's laying there. And, dude, I'm telling you, Louie, I had no idea what was wrong with that cow. I mean, I've been out of school 2 days. You don't know anything. So I went back down to the pickup, and I got out some stuff to run tests. You know, that's what you do in school, run tests. I got a stethoscope and a thermometer and some blood tubes, and I was going to go back up there and start having a look at this cow, and I did, and went to get some blood, and the blood come back, and it was chocolate brown, and I knew what that meant. That meant it was nitrate toxicity, and somewhere around there was some plants that had too much nitrogen in them, and I just happened to pack the antidote down there in the pickup, so I was pretty happy, so I go back down there, and I get the antidote and go back up the side of the hill and give it to the cow in her vein, and old Otis, the cussing type B fat guy, looks over at me and he says, what happens now? And I said, well, you know, the book don't tell you that. It just says give this stuff, and that's all it says. It doesn't say run away or it'll take 30 minutes for it to get up. It just says give it, and I didn't know what to say. But about the time I was going to answer, that big old cow rolled over up on her belly, and she looked at me, and she looked over at Otis, and she looked back at me, and I could tell she was thinking, I can catch that fat guy. Well, I grew up with cows. When they get that look in their eye, man, we run away. I don't want to be no hero. 1,400-pound cow against a 180-pound veterinarian, it's not going to be much of a fight. So I took off running. And I thought Otis, the 400-pound fat guy, was right behind me, but he wasn't. I ran down there and jumped in the back of the pickup, and I looked up, and that cow was whooping him now, Louie. She had him bouncing off all the sides of that canyon. Finally, she pushed him over the edge, and he piled up in that riverbed, and I told him, I hollered at him, you better get up, she's coming after you. And he started running towards the pickup. Well, the closer to the pickup he got, the shorter his strides were. Remember, he's a type B fat guy with those suspenders and his pants falling down. And so he can't throw his leg up over the side of the pickup, and I'm trying to pull him in, you know, trying to get him over the side before that big cow gets there. And in the process, I reach around and grab the back of him and get a hold of his, like, size 58 boxers, and I'm giving my first client a wedgie, trying to get him in the back of a pickup so a cow won't kill him. Well, he don't make it, and she starts running around chasing him, and he finally gets his britches back up, and she starts whooping him again, and I hop out of there, and she ran off. And so the moral of the story is I nearly lost, saved my first patient but lost my first client because the cow nearly killed him, and I gave the guy a wedgie. And, you know, if you'd asked me when I was 20 years old, when I got out of vet school, if I was going to, what would be the scenario where you would give your very first client a power wedgie, I couldn't have come up with it, but it happened.
You literally hit the ground running right after vet school.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was pretty exciting.
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock. He is a veterinarian, teacher, and the author of the book, Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. And Otis is just a taste of what you can find in this book. You also use your practice and you are able to educate people. And a fishing trip with your daughters turns into an educational day.
Yeah, you know, we spend a lot of time up here. This last weekend was just a testimonial that, you know, we do a lot of surgery on horses that are emergencies, colic surgeries, and we get a lot from El Paso, as a matter of fact, because there's not very many people in that area that do it. And it's a kind of an emergency thing that you have to do when it happens. And what it means is that you spend a lot of time up here, you know, when you could be doing stuff with your family. And it gets, you know, 2 or 3 years of that or 4 years of that, but 25 years of that, it gets to be pretty difficult. But I just got to where I'd take my children with me so I could spend time with them. And you know, I guess maybe Abby, the middle girl, is going to go to vet school. She probably knows more about being a veterinarian as far as lifestyle goes and how to do mechanical things as anybody there, because she spent her whole life with her dad doing arthroscopies and colic surgeries and C-sections on cows and delivering puppies in the middle of the night. You know, all the things that, you know, we raised pigs and showed them and did surgeries and they can castrate them. And, you know, it's a good life if you let it be. If you let it defeat you, it will. Just like every career, though, they're all that way.
Now, you're talking about Abby, and I guess she's the one who made the comment also when you were having dinner or she was watching TV and your wife was taking care of your nephew and she was changing his diaper.
Yeah, you know, the three daughters and wife, and my wife has five brothers and sisters, and I got a brother and a sister, and somehow there's never a girl kid, so my daughters had never seen a naked boy. I don't run around the house naked, so I guess they just assumed that everybody looked the same naked. Well, we finally had a nephew, a little boy, and my wife was changing his britches, and my daughter, Kimmy, it was Kimmy, it wasn't Abby, she was watching SpongeBob and eating Cheetos, and she looked down there and saw that thing. She looked like a dog listening to a high-pitched noise. Her old head went from side to side. She did not know what that thing was. She got down there and got a close look at it, and she'd sat there, and she'd just about say something. She's about 4 years old, but then she'd kind of think about it some more. And finally, she looked over at my wife, and she said, "What kind of hiney is that?" Well, you know, being a father and not wanting to miss a chance to teach, I told her, I said, "That's an evil hiney. You need to stay away from hineys like that." She looked at me like he was going to jump off there and kill her. And my wife said, "Oh, now, wait a minute," and explained it to her. Made me realize that I had three daughters that were going to start dating pretty soon. So I made me a sign and put it over the door there coming into the house that says, "I've castrated thousands of animals. If you want to date my daughter, don't be an animal."
We are visiting with Dr. Bo Brock, veterinarian, teacher, and author of Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere, a collection of short stories about his many adventures and experiences as a veterinarian, a horse doctor, in the middle of nowhere, as he says. Now, you graduated and you said you wanted to be a horse doctor, but from the stories in your book, you ended up being like Doc in Gunsmoke. You take care of everyone and everything.
We take care of all kinds of animals. We have a specialty clinic for horses, but we still do all animals. We do, well, everything. Just, we got six veterinarians here, and between the six of us, we can just about fix anything.
Now, tell us a little bit about what is perhaps the most common thing that happens, or perhaps even the most unusual thing that you've experienced?
Well, most common is a lot different than most unusual. The most unusual thing was some fellow over west of here 10, 15 years ago decided he wanted to raise reindeer. And what he would do is he would raise these reindeer, and then at Christmas he would take them to malls all over the country and lease them out for a month and then bring them back home and breed them and make more reindeer. Well, I'm telling you, Louie, a reindeer lives in the Arctic because it does not like to get hot. when you come to West Texas, I mean, that must be hell for a reindeer. But we did a lot of work on reindeer until he finally decided to quit raising them here because it just didn't work too good. But we did a lot of work on reindeer, and that's pretty unusual for a vet in West Texas. And the most common thing we see, Louie, is just lame horses. That's, I mean, we see lots of lame horses.
So nothing has really changed from the old days of the American West as far as the horses, a lot of lame horses and horses that aren't shod properly?
Yeah, shoeing has a lot to do with it, foot care, nutrition, you know. But you know, horses, particular breeds and event stay, they have common lamenesses. And, you know, if race horses are different than rope horses as far as which parts wear out the quickest and get the lamest. So we see all kinds of horses from all disciplines, really.
Bo, as we're wrapping up here, you mentioned earlier that you have a Facebook page. Would you mind telling us how our listeners can get to that page?
It's just Brock Veterinary Clinic there at Facebook, and those, a lot of those stories are posted on there, and you know, it's got pictures of things we do at the clinic, and you can kind of meet the people that work here. There's good people. We've got veterinarians from Georgia, West Virginia, and North Dakota, and we've got one from California, and we've got some from Texas and New Mexico. So we got veterinarians from all over the place that work here. It's kind of fun to get different cultures, people from different areas that keep us, you know, alive and going.
Well, it's been fun visiting with you, Doctor. I want to thank you very much for being with us. We've been visiting with Dr. Bo Brock, veterinarian in West Texas. He's out in La Mesa, Texas. He is the author of the book Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere. And if you want to check out his Facebook and find out more about some of the stories and some of the experiences he's had, you can go to Facebook, Brock Veterinarian Clinic. Again, the book is called Crowded in the Middle of Nowhere by Dr. Bo Brock. Dr. Brock, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Well, Louie, it was a joy to get to visit with you. You have a happy day.
Thank you. You too.
Kevin Kline reveals the secret of making a great movie. I'm Bill Newcott, and from AARP Studios, this is Movies for Grownups.
I inherited this apartment from my father.
This apartment is a Vierge. The buyer must pay a fee until the seller dies.
Until you die?
Until I die.
Kevin Kline plays a guy who inherits a Paris apartment, only to find it's occupied by an old woman who, according to law, doesn't have to leave for as long as she lives. That's the premise of the new movie, My Old Lady, co-starring Maggie Smith as the lady in question and Kristen Scott Thomas as her daughter.
You're so beautiful.
I'm not beautiful. I'm nearly old.
Perfect flower is nearly old.
The movie starts out funny, but soon we find ourselves drawn into the characters' sometimes dark and troubled stories. It's written and directed by Israel Horovitz, one of the world's most beloved playwrights, who here directs his first feature film at age 75. He's got a great cast to work with, and Kevin Kline told me that was no accident.
Well, he did quote more than once Sidney Lumet's statement that the I think it was Sidney Lumet or Sidney Pollack or Sidney Poitier, some Sidney once said. That the key to directing is get the best actors in the world, if you can, and then get out of their way. And that was certainly music to my ears, because there are intrusive directors who are trying to graft onto you and onto your very spirit and soul some idea that they have, which doesn't necessarily jibe with your own instincts. And that can be a struggle. But there was he allowed the actors great freedom. And also, the nature of the budget, you just fly by the seat of the pants and just make sure you're wearing your best pants.
My Old Lady, starring Kevin Kline, Maggie Smith, and Kristen Scott Thomas, is in theaters now. I'm Bill Newcott.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.